Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, offering financial products and services created specifically for the cooperative's member owners to meet the needs of rural America, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, point-of-sale financing, and risk management options, helping farm families succeed today and tomorrow.
On the road across the great state of Illinois, I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. This is the June 13 edition of the Closing Market Report. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes. She's at Stewart Peterson. A great deal has happened since the United States Department of Agriculture released the WASDE, or World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates, yesterday. We'll go through some of the numbers that USDA released, how Jackie views them, what's happening in the trade today, the potential for acreage to change at the end of the month, and what Informa has to say about those numbers. And then, as we wrap up our time together, we'll take a look at the weather forecast with Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. I'm on the road, of course, with the folks from Roach Ag Marketing on our grain elevator tour. Been busy all week long. This morning I was in Hartsburg, and I'll be on my way to Galena shortly for the Illinois Beef Association Summer Conference that's taking place today and tomorrow. So hopefully we'll have an opportunity to talk with them about beef production tomorrow, and you'll hear more about that during the Closing Market Report then. But on this day, do stay with us as we'll take you through all of those things, plus some ag news, right here on Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here are the numbers as they finished up in Chicago for this Wednesday. July corn down a penny and a half at $3.76 today. September, $3.85 and a half, one and a quarter lower. And December, your new crop at $3.97 a penny and a quarter lower. March contract down one and a quarter at $4.06 and a quarter. And the May at $4.12 and a quarter, a penny and a quarter lower. Soy complex, July beans, 18 cents lower at $9.36. August, $9.41 and three quarters, down 17 and three quarters. And November beans, 15 and three quarters lower at $9.58 and three quarters. January at $9.67, down 15 and a quarter. And the March contract, 15 lower at $9.68 and a half cents. The bean meal futures up 3 cents at $30.08. And the bean oil at $3.47.70. That's rather the meal, down $5.80. Wheat futures, July contract at $5.16 and a half, down 18. And the soft bread, the hard bread, down 14 and a half cents. It finished at $5.39. Live cattle futures in Chicago, 60 lower at 107.92 and a half. Feeders down 15 at 145.65. And lean hogs for the day in June's at $81 even, up 47 and a half cents. You're listening, of course, to Illinois Public Media. Here's what some of the other markets are trading like at this hour. Crude oil for the day at $66.64, up 28 cents. Ethanol futures $1.43 and 7 tenths of a cent, down 7 tenths. And heating oil or diesel fuel 2 and 3 tenths lower at $2.18 and a half. Gasoline on the RBOB, the wholesale price up 3 and 4 tenths of a cent at $2.12 and 4 tenths. And natural gas for the day at $2.96 and a half, up 2 and 6 tenths of a cent. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 25,251. Down 45 points. The U.S. dollar up 0.104 at 93.905. And gold futures for the afternoon, $1,293.70, down $1.40. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this evening. Mostly clear skies, a low 57 degrees on a north wind at 5 to 8. That'll get calm after midnight. Sunny skies tomorrow at 84. South-southeast winds at 3 to 7. For Thursday, partly cloudy, a low of 64. Southeast winds at 6 miles an hour. And Friday evening, Thursday night will drop to 64. Friday night, a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms. This actually for the day before 1 p.m. Mostly sunny skies and a high of 88. South winds at 6 to 9. And Friday evening now, partly cloudy and a low of 69. Saturday, sunny skies and 93. South-southwest winds about 8 miles an hour. Saturday night, mostly clear and 73 degrees. Sunday, sunny and 94. And Sunday evening, clear with a 73-degree low. On Monday, mostly sunny skies, a high of 94 degrees Monday evening, a chance of showers, maybe a thunderstorm, partly cloudy, a low of 71, and Tuesday, a chance of showers and thunderstorms, partly sunny with a high of 86 degrees. We'll learn more about the agricultural weather forecast in a few minutes right here on Illinois Public Media. We'll talk with Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Of course, I'm traveling today. Started the morning in Hartsburg, all in the evening in northern Illinois, maybe Freeport or Galena. I haven't decided exactly how far I'm going to go. And I'll be at the Illinois Beef Association summer meeting tomorrow. So we'll look forward to bringing you some news and information from there. But this afternoon, right now, we're joined by Jackie Vake. She's at Stewart Peterson to talk about the marketplace. Wow, what a day it's been. What a couple of days, Jackie, really. USDA reports and some numbers that have begun to push the marketplace around again. Tell me about what you see.
Yeah, it's a rough and tumble one, I can tell you that. We do like to start with support and resistance, and I think there's some very interesting things here today. All of these are based on weekly numbers. They're not daily numbers. So when you look at July, we've got resistance at the moment at 381, but major resistance at 410. We saw the low today at the lowest level we've seen since January of this year, and we've got support at 360. You look at the July beans. Now, we've got overhead resistance at $10. We saw the low, the lowest since March of 2016, and major support at $9. December corn, resistance at $4. We've got a double bottom in at 387 and three quarters, and the low today was the lowest we've been since February of 2016. We've got some support down there at that 380 level, which should be pretty strong. November beans, $10 resistance, not a big surprise, but we were the lowest we've been since August of 2017 on November beans today, and major support now is at 924. Now, mind you, when this is weekly charts, this is pretty serious stuff we're talking about. So yesterday's report gave us some big up move, and today, boy, we made a decision, or the market made a decision that it wanted to go the other direction most of the day, and so it's been a tough one.
Yeah, so just some clarification on some of those numbers from USDA. I had gotten a note from them yesterday afternoon about the 50 million bushel change in the ethanol number for corn. It went up 50 billion. And the reason behind that is that the tariff, which came off of sorghum, allowed sorghum, which they thought was going to be about 50 billion into the ethanol grind, to be swapped out. So essentially the sorghum goes overseas or into other uses. And what they're telling us is that those bushels will actually be consumed by corn rather than sorghum. So that's just a quick number. Anything else out of that USDA report you found of interest? I mean, we dropped the corn ending stocks by 105 million bushels and the soybeans, both for new crop, for 30 million bushels.
Right. Well, it was just normal that we came in with a lower number on the 18-19, considering that we dropped 17-18 by 82 million. And I was encouraged, too, that part of that 50 million, part of the 82 million actually was feed consumption too. So, that's a big plus. I think that in general, the market, of course, hadn't anticipated such a big drop on the 18-19, and that's why we had quite a bump up yesterday. If you looked at overall production on that report, everything stayed the same. The yield stayed the same. The only thing that changed on yield was wheat, and they actually raised the yield on wheat to 48.4 compared to 48.1 from last month. So I thought that was interesting because, everybody's been pretty hyped up that wheat isn't going to be much. You look at the world-ending stocks, we saw for 18-19, we actually saw the corn stocks go down 2 million metric tons, wheat stocks up 2 million metric tons, and beans just a third of a metric ton change. So very little change on the bean side of things. 18-19, corn stocks are down by 4.5 million metric tons, beans 0.3 of a metric ton again, and wheat up 2 million metric tons. So I think, the market looked at that and said, well, this is a reflection basically of South America's issues that they're having, and, they're looking at the acreage that they're currently working with. Now, you looked at Brazil, corn went down 2 million metric tons, basically. Argentina didn't change at all, which was kind of a surprise. Beans in Brazil, however, went up 2 million metric tons to 119 million metric tons. That's unbelievable. When we had 114 the other year, I thought was pretty amazing, and 117 last month and 119 this month. And the Argentinian beans went down by 2 million. Now, people might say, well, then why are we down so hard on beans today after we were up yesterday? Well, I think that some of it is in relation to the fact that there's been more digestion of this report. And when you look at Brazil, Brazil really is our main competitor for bean exports. And so I think that the market is just kind of trying to find its way, basically.
When we look forward, the next big signpost that we'll have is at the end of the month. I believe it's on the 29th day of June. The acreage and the grain stocks numbers are out. Anything on either of those reports?
Well, yeah, it was interesting today. I think this is also added to some of the fuel on the movement in the market. Informa came out, and they came out at 88.7 million acres versus the USDA's 88, and 89.9 versus the USDA's 89. Wheat 46.9, USDA is at 47.3, so they reduced the wheat acres a little bit, and cotton 14.1. Versus 13.5, so they increased the cotton acres. Now, I looked at total acres. Last year, we had 238.9 million total acres. And as of last month, the USDA was at 237.8 million acres. And right now, Informa's at 239.6. So that's, you know, that's 700,000 acres higher than what we were a year ago, which I could maybe see as a possibility because of the change that we've seen in cotton. Cotton was only 12.6 million last year. We're at 14.1. But, you know, the question has to be is, will we be that strong when it comes to the soy acres? And, you know, if we're not, all of this is already in the market. So, you know, we just keep on moving from here is what we do, and look forward to the end of the month and having that out of the way.
And of course, the other item that continues to play into the marketplace is what's been happening in Washington, D.C. What's one of the most important issues you're looking at there?
Well, I think it was really interesting. You know, I follow a lot on on the RFS website as well as the news. And Scott Pruitt, you know, who's the head of the EPA, has come under some pretty nasty scrutiny since the White House actually suspended, you know, their bid to reform the biofuels, you know, because he just wasn't cooperating at all. So this week he was out doing a multi-day trip, and he ended up doing a meeting in Kansas where he met some quite strong opposition. Is that a good way of saying it, Todd? I'm not really sure, but I don't think I'd want to bend him. Let's just put it that way. But at that meeting, it was interesting because he more or less said, we have the power to expand the sales of higher ethanol gas blends, and we're working on the legal issues to move ahead with an RVP waiver for year-round sales of the E15, which I thought was very encouraging, you know, and I'm sure it saved him slightly, but he did not address the RINs, you know, or anything else. And so he kind of dangled the carrot out there. Now we'll see once what really happens, but it's something. And I think it's interesting that he's actually out there, and I guess suspending the bid gave him some
breathing room, probably.
Yeah, I think so.
Any final word from you or tidbit that we ought to be aware of?
Well, yes. When it comes to Brazil, you know, we've of course talked a lot the last couple of weeks about the truck strike that's been going on down there, and that's technically over. But you know, this government freight rates that they basically have been trying to force onto the people isn't settled yet, and so it is definitely delaying the movement of goods. And right now, they're speculating that there's at least 60 ships that are sitting in the port that are facing loading delays. So I guess the bottom line comes down to, this still supports us as being a much more reliable supplier.
Okay, thanks so much, Jackie. Always good to talk with you.
You bet. You have a great day.
You too. Jackie Vikes, of course, is with Stuart Peterson. Well, in today's agricultural news, let's pick up where we left off, relatively speaking, with Jackie Vakes and EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt. He is visiting South Dakota today, but he's getting a cold shoulder there as well from the state's corn growers. Pruitt's scheduled to visit with sorghum producers at a cattle operation in Reliance, South Dakota. However, the Corn Growers Association of the state, Executive Director Lisa Richardson, says President Trump promised to provide the pathway for year-round sales of E15, and Pruitt, that he's not welcome in the state unless he really does deliver on that promise.
Our largest market far and away in this state is ethanol. So for him to come in to our backyard and not keep the president's word on E15, we're just curious why he's here. it's unless he's here to announce E15, we certainly don't understand that.
The South Dakota Corn Growers Association executive director says Pruitt has single-handedly damaged the ethanol industry by proposing a cap on RINs and granting hardship waivers to oil refiners to opt out of their obligation under the Renewable Fuels Standard. This has resulted, she says, in lost corn grind of about 700,000 to 800,000 bushels.
Now, he has really undermined our industry and really caused demand destruction for corn growers across the U.S. He's given out, and he hasn't even announced, or it's all under the radar, but what we have figured, he's given out between 1.4 and 1.6 billion gallons that major refineries that are making billions of dollars out of the renewable fuel standards.
South Dakota corn growers are holding a tractor rally today to put pressure on the administrator to grant relief from the Reed vapor pressure rule and to allow E15 sales. Now, as a follow-up to what the EPA administrator said yesterday, he spent part of his trip in Kansas at an ethanol production facility. Pruitt's trip included a stop at the East Kansas Agri-Energy ethanol plant, along with meeting local agricultural groups. The visit comes a week, of course, after the White House stopped a proposal that ethanol groups say would harm the industry, allowing RIN exports. But the proposal also included that year-round E15 sales we've been talking about. Pruitt told the group he believes E15 should be available year-round. He said the EPA has the authority and will seek a waiver to allow year-round E15 sales. But the ethanol industry has seen other perceived attacks, including that hardship waiver under the Renewable Fuel Standard account for an estimated demand loss of 1.56 billion gallons, that according to the Renewable Fuels Association. And those in the ethanol industry meeting with Pruitt didn't hold back, expressing their anger towards him and the EPA. Via Twitter, Pruitt said the meeting was candid and productive. Let's stay with this ethanol issue because it continues to come up in many forms. The EPA is considering an Obama-era ban on higher blended ethanol blends in non-flex fuel vehicles, and that has one farm group so far expressing serious concern. The National Farmers Union biofuels advisor Ann Steckel says the proposal is left over from the Obama administration, but that the Trump EPA is now considering it.
Well, this is a big deal because we certainly want to incentivize the use of higher level blends of ethanol, and even up to E30. We think that there's tremendous value in that. It's obviously cleaner for the environment, cleaner for in the air. It comes at a reduced cost to consumers.
Steckel says higher blends add octane that car makers will want in future higher compression engines.
The car manufacturers are actually looking to get higher octane and lower carbon. Why we're concerned is if the administration keeps this language in this proposed rule like they have now, that would be very problematic to move to those higher level blends of ethanol industry.
Well, Steckel says the administration has so far given no official word that it's withdrawing from the proposal. So Farmers Union is acting as if the rule's still under active review, asking that it be withdrawn. The development, of course, follows EPA's granting of numerous renewable fuel waivers to oil refiners and a compromise the president nixed last week to help lower compliance credit costs to refiners, but also allows year-round E15 use. And finally today, U.S. tractor and combine sales increased last month. That according to the latest monthly measure by the Association of Equipment Manufacturers. The association's monthly report shows sales of all tractors in the United States during May increased 17% compared to the same month last year. Combine sales were up to 52% higher for the month. Sales of combines for the year total 1,550 compared to 1,225 in the same period last year. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Wednesday afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Drew Lerner is now here. He's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Good afternoon to you, Drew.
Good afternoon.
Let's talk about the weather forecast here. We've discussed some of the rainfall that we've had. I suppose we had a look forward into the coming week. Do we have much of a change in the pattern?
Well, we do have at least a temporary disruption. We're going to have a ridge of high pressure that's going to be relatively significant, at least so far for this season, and it will push across the heart of the Midwest, setting up from Friday through Monday. And during that multi-day period, we are going to see some rather warm and sticky conditions occurring out there. The humidity will be fairly high, and but temperatures are going to get also quite high, probably into the lower middle 90s and quite a bit of the Midwest. Upper 90s will occur in parts of the drier areas, maybe as far to the east as west central and southwestern Illinois, but certainly Missouri, Kansas, and southwestern and west central parts of Iowa and Nebraska. So all those areas will be pretty high into the 90s, and it would not surprise me at all to see some extremes over 100 degrees in western Iowa and Nebraska and maybe down into parts of eastern Kansas. So a little bit of excessive summer here for a little bit. That next week, maybe we'll get a little bit of shower activity to occur again and bring some cooler air across the region. It will be a gradual process, but we should manage to get some relief.
It sounds like it is the start to a really good growing season. The corn crop, soybean crop in awfully good shape across the nation. Are there places that you're worried about in the United States or other places around the planet?
I am a little concerned about the western corn belt, even though we've got good soil moisture in most areas right now. The subsoil is not quite as abundant as it was last year and the year before. And with this drying tendency coming and going across parts of the corn belt and the warmer bias that we seem to have going for weeks here and several more to go, I'm just a little concerned we're going to deplete moisture a little bit faster when situations like what we have coming up this weekend occur periodically where the ridge comes into the parts of the crop region. So even though we don't have a real serious issue at the moment, Missouri certainly is too dry at the moment, so is parts of the Delta. But as we go forward through the next week to week and a half, I think we'll see a larger part of the western corn belt drying down a little bit more significantly, a little bit more concern about the longer range outlook. Outside of that, in the rest of North America, we're still watching the southwestern parts of the Canadian prairies are still pretty dry. Northern portions of Montana, northwestern North Dakota also running dry. And, of course, the Texas drought is still very serious, but there is a little tropical system coming up here for this weekend and early next week that hopefully will bring showers and thunderstorms to a big part of that state.
And there's also been a lot of discussion about dry weather in Ukraine, parts of Russia, and all the way into some of the growing regions of China. Are those still ongoing?
They are still ongoing, but each of those regions are going to get at least partial relief coming up in the next week to week and a half. In Ukraine, it's going to be wettest in the central and western parts of the country. The farther west you go, the more significant the rain might be. So there will be some significant relief there. It's not going to be a long-term fix, but short-term we'll see improvements there. It's still much too dry, though, from eastern Ukraine into Kazakhstan, including Russia's southern region. So that area will not see relief and will continue to be too dry. In China, we've had most of the northern crop areas running quite dry here this spring. The northeast provinces, where about half of the corn and soybeans are produced, will actually see frequent showers and thunderstorms over the coming week, and that should fix them at least to a certain degree. Areas to the west in the Yellow River Basin and western parts of their North China Plain will probably stay too dry. And in the case of Australia, it's been really dry in Queensland and northern New South Wales, and those areas have been in a drought for many months and will continue to be that way. And the biggest worry about them is it looks like we may see an El Nino evolve later this calendar year. And if that happens, their drought is destined to last for another year.
Thank you so much. And we'll keep in touch with you, especially about that El Nino. That's a word that farmers hear often and makes them cringe just a bit. Thanks so much.
All right. Take care. Have a good day.
You too. That, of course, is Drew Lerner. He is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.
It's National Lobster Day. Prior to the 20th century, lobster was not a popular food in the U.S. In fact, eating lobster was considered a mark of poverty, or as a food for slaves or lower members of society. And lobsters were also used as a fertilizer for farms. The market for lobster changed when modern transportation methods allowed the live shipping of lobster from ports to large cities inland. On this day in agricultural history in 1789, Elizabeth Hamilton, wife of Alexander Hamilton, the first Secretary of the Treasury, is said to have served a new dessert treat to General George Washington. The highlight of the dinner party was ice cream. After its introduction, ice cream often appeared on the presidential Thursday dinner menu. By the way, an entry in Washington's ledger reveals that he purchased a cream machine for ice at Mount Vernon. In 1817, Richard Lovell Edgeworth died, an Anglo-Irish inventor. Among his many inventions and innovations was a turnip cutter, as well as various improvements in agricultural machines, including a one-wheeled carriage adopted to go over narrow roads. And in 1893, African-American inventor T.W. Stewart received a patent for a mop. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
It's time to define a marketing term. Commodity broker, analyst, and author of Mastering the Grain Markets, Elaine Cubb, joins us. She believes the key to profitable grain trading is building knowledge about the fundamental practices of the industry. Today, she helps us define the word arbitrage. Here's one definition: the simultaneous buying and selling of identical assets in order to take advantage of differing prices for that same asset. Well, it sounds a bit like what a grain elevator does.
Right.
And Elaine, how would you define arbitrage?
Well, I would say it mostly the same way. You know, you're simultaneously buying and selling something, I would say, within the same market space. So they don't have to be identical. For instance, a lot of speculative arbitrages can occur in the grain markets between, let's say, between Kansas City wheat and Chicago wheat. Those are not identical products, but they're within the same market space. And the reason that you do this is because you have a reasonable expectation that the same market space is going to move in the same direction at the same time. So as one of these positions that you take, the sale, for instance, might be making money, and the purchase will simultaneously be losing money. But the idea that you have is that you have an opinion about how the difference between those two assets is going to change, how the spread itself is going to change. And that's where you're making your money on an arbitrage trade, is that you're making relatively more money than you're losing at the exact same time.
And that would be a speculative position.
That would be a speculative position. So the other ones that are very classic in the grain markets are spreading between one crop year and the next, you know, buying old crop corn futures and selling new crop corn futures, or buying soybeans and selling soybeans. But there is a spread trade that's very common within the commercial side of the industry, and that's your crush spreads, your soybeans versus soybean meal and soybean oil. So there are certainly a lot of these arbitrage trades that do occur as part of the cash market, but we just don't necessarily think of them as arbitrage trades or realize that that's what's going on.
And the other possibility for an arbitrage trade is buying one product in one place and selling that same product in a different geographical space.
The geographical arbitrage is very common in the cash grain trading industry. You will notice, you know, that basis gets really hot in one part of the country, but grain is perhaps more available in another part of the country, so you can buy it where it's cheap and sell it where it's high. It's the old adage, buy low, sell high, but you're doing it at the same time and therefore minimizing your risk.
Elaine Cubb, commodity broker, analyst, and author of Mastering the Grain Markets. Today, she defined the word arbitrage, the simultaneous buying and selling of identical assets in order to take advantage of differing prices for that same asset.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. Since 1916, Farm Credit Illinois has been helping farm families succeed, providing farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing. Through both the prosperous and challenging economic cycles of agriculture, Farm Credit will support rural Illinois today and tomorrow.